personnel to do anything, including to direct soldiers where to live or shower. She found that Mass's death was a result of a decision by the military, which she also ruled the court has no power to second-guess under the constitutional separation of powers. But the contractor had significant discretion over how to implement the military's orders, according to a three-judge panel of the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in its 55-page opinion reviving the lawsuit. House Republicans plan to propose a $40 billion cut to the nation's food stamp program, according to the head of the House Agriculture Committee, doubling the number of cuts previously sought by conservatives. Committee Chairman Frank Lucas said legislation on the food assistance program, known as SNAP, would be the second part of any talks on the U.S. Farm Bill with the Senate. Lucas told lobbyists during a lunch speech in Washington that a Republican working group agreed on cuts expected to total $40 billion and could include steps such as mandatory drug tests and employment rules. With IRN,
The following program is brought to you by Tim Elins and Paul Edwards.
Welcome to Left, Right, and You with liberal columnist Jeff Ward and conservative public policy activist Alan Skillicorn on WRMN 1410. They're talking current events, politics, local, state, and federal. Your phone calls are always welcome at 847-931-1410, 847-931-1410. Now here's Jeff Ward and Alan Skillicorn and Left, Right, and You.
Welcome, everybody. Today is Thursday, August 1st.
Ooh, you're on
2013.
A roll. I think we've got the date right for 3 or 4 weeks now.
And what's our phone number again?
So we're can call in. 847-931-1410.
1410, just like the number on the dial.
And by the way, speaking of callers, Tracy called in last week when we were discussing the Trayvon Martin thing. And Tracy, I would love for you to send us some sort of email through the Left, Right, and You Facebook page or my thefirstward.net blog or alanskillicorn.com because you did such a great job. We'd like to perhaps have you on more regularly. So what the hell's up with you, Alan?
Not too much. I saw that there was an article about something that I'm commenting locally, and ironically, it's something that I think the Courier interviewed me like 2 or 3 weeks ago about. Mm-hmm. I didn't forget about the issue, but I wasn't expecting, and it was actually very funny because they didn't ask for me to come back and like kind of defend myself a little bit too, because some of the retorts against me weren't actually accurate.
Well, and when you say retorts, do you mean the within the column article itself comments?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I tried the comment, but they didn't allow my comment. They got rid of it.
Sadly, I think Paul Harth is one of the best newspaper people around, but the Courier News is in its death throes. There's not enough staff. They don't do what they need to do. You know, it's almost over for the Sun-Times News Group, and that's sad. It really is. I don't take any joy in that.
Well, newspapers are, a weird, nowadays it's not something that has a huge future.
No,
unless they change their business model. Maybe it's more internet. I mean, there's so many news sources. I mean, just now I was reading an article on Forbes, but not in the magazine, but on their website. That's kind of the way of the future.
Oh, it is. And newspapers, as I have written, said, are right now steeped in the Einsteinian definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah, they've got to change that business model. And some of them that put up these paywalls and stuff, that's turning people off too.
Well, I mean, they should have, they should never have given away their stuff for free.
I think it can be done with advertising. I mean, there's a lot of models out there to do with the advertising.
Not with the
Huffington Post, Drudge, and all that. Well, overhead of printing newspapers might be what they're wasting
the
money on.
The Huffington Post doesn't pay their writers, and that's not going to go on forever.
I bet you they're racking.
Newspapers, the biggest issue is that they need people want the content. They needed to charge for it from square one. They've trained people not to pay for it.
How is the I hear the pay to view the new way for the Herald to make money. I don't know if the Sun-Times has that.
They do.
I know the Herald, the Tribune does have
the Tribune
as
the
a digital copy.
Yeah. The Daily Herald.
Does that work? Is that feasible for keeping the paper running?
Well, the problem is internet revenue.
Yeah.
Runs about 1/7 of what print revenue.
But I think that's going to be changing because people are going to be converting over to internet instead of watching TV and cable.
It may.
It's going to be a mixed medium in the future.
Right. But one of the things that these newspapers have to do, too, is, and I felt like I did it in my time, trying not to sound like I'm bragging, but content. And there is nothing these newspapers have that makes that makes you want to read them these days. Nothing.
but it's so much, people are so used to, and I don't know if, your articles are online. It was so easy for people to go online before the walls, the paywalls, to go on there and just, take your copy, Jeff, and print it out. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, now you have to get it, pay whatever the $3 a month or whatever the – and again, as opposed to a newspaper, it's still cheaper.
My suggestion was to take me off the internet completely and make them have to buy the print copy for my columns.
Right.
That's what I thought they should have done.
The Herald does that for some of their columnists also.
Right. But
well, here, if these newspaper reporters or the newspapers themselves wanted some good content to write about, alanskillicorn.com. Yes. Just check it out.
And
you
it's
can
free.
Write something
and I thought,
daily.
And it's
I
free,
thought
right?
I was self-promoting.
Alan Skillicorn is free?
That is free, yes.
Okay.
And there's no ads, by
Actually,
the way.
Actually, Alan pays people to go to his website. But speaking – now this is a momentous occasion.
I read that somewhere.
I am on the air going to admit that I was wrong. This may be the first and only time, but I am going to admit that I was wrong because
– Hold on. I'm going to go check. There's like four horsemen around here.
Well, it's cold out. Hell's freezing over. But a month or so ago when Governor Quinn decided that he was so fed up with the lack of a pension fix, he would veto the line item – that paid our Springfield legislators' salaries. I said no one would have the cojones to sue the governor to try to get their pay back. I was wrong. Because yesterday, Mike Madigan and Darth Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton did just that. They're suing the governor to get their payback. And we know Mike is very poor.
Jeff, do you want to know the irony to this?
I am irony man himself.
Is that Madigan and Cullerton are doing this at taxpayer expense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they're doing it as an official duty of their office. So actually right now in Springfield, Lisa Madigan is thinking about, do I defend the governor
or
do I side with my father?
You mean in Springfield?
In Springfield.
Now the fascinating thing, too, is Madigan's and Cullerton's theory, which is twofold, is one, it's interfering with the whole legislative process, which may or may not be true. And two, that he could use this tactic to affect the outcome of gun control. Abortion, and this is an exact quote, gun control, abortion rights, or tax policy.
Yes, Quinn could do that. I don't know if you said Madigan, but
yes,
Quinn could
the
use
governor,
this type of veto, yes.
But actually, I think Quinn has the better point, and I never thought I'd say that because Governor Jellyfish is not one of my favorites. But Quinn basically said, I'm not asking for a specific outcome. I'm asking that these guys do their job, and if they don't do their job, they shouldn't get paid. And I got to tell you, I love that argument.
It is an interesting. I mean, I don't want to get too dialed into a constitutional question, but it does seem to be a loophole in the Illinois Constitution. But I'm still stuck on. We have five, assistant attorney generals, now going ahead into this case. Yet we don't have anyone looking at the Metro.
Mm-hmm.
Metro is falling apart as we speak.
Well, actually,
people are resigning. I know that you're going to be an opportunist here, and.
Yeah. Yes, and I did put my application in for the Metro Board.
Even if that means no pension?
That's gone.
Yeah.
No pension.
I think that's why they're all resigned.
They still get paid, but no pension, no health care benefits. But in this case, I actually think Quinn might prevail on this, and we'll have to see what happens. Of course, then Tom Cross, the quintessential eunuch in the harem said, we're looking at complete dysfunction, and that is an exact quote. But that's a lot, in my mind, Tom Cross, the minority leader of mm-hmm. the House, who's supposed to be the Republican voice of reason, him saying we're at complete dysfunction is like Anthony Weiner hosting a Respect for Women seminar.
So are you saying the Republicans in Illinois are dysfunctional also?
I'm saying that they're right there with them. I mean, Tom Cross is Mike Madigan light. And as long as Tom, gets paid and gets
that's filling
business and you know he's not going to take a stand. I don't see Republicans taking a stand on it.
Well, really this you know look at this
maybe
issue.
One that's going to dial in. You, I see.
Actually,
you know,
he's a Democrat, but
oh, geez. That,
you know, here is the interesting.
How did a Democrat
the
get elected
majority
in Montgomery County?
Of the Republican caucus voted against the pension bill. So only 22 of I think 47 Republicans that are in Springfield voted for the pension bill, including the ones that are around us. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that are in our area here, and obviously our listening area goes up quite far. And if you're listening on the internet, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's right. All over. But the ones that are physically right around us, you know, they didn't even vote for it. And so basically, the Democrats have marched us through. Now the pension. Here's the ironic thing: the pension reform that Pat Quinn wants passed the House.
Mm-hmm.
It passed the House, but it didn't pass the Senate. And there's some more complexities to that. It almost passed the Senate. I think it was like 3 votes, and then it was rewritten. And because that Mike Madigan took over the bill, basically the senators got mad, and most of them voted against it. But you know, isn't that ironic that even here, you know, in a Republican area, the legislators around here, both in the House and the Senate, didn't vote for it.
Well, you know, the thing that gets me when I look at the Zen of the situation, I consider, you know, reading between the lines, people used to have a sense of shame. Politicians used to at least get embarrassed. And for Cullerton and Madigan to spend taxpayers' money, excellent point, Alan, to sue the governor for withholding their salary because I believe they're not doing their job, it's so – if you had told me that – would come to pass 10 years ago, I would have told your wife to lock up the liquor cabinet.
It does seem absolutely silly.
You know,
and here, these guys aren't suffering.
No.
I mean, most of these guys have other full-time jobs besides this part-time
right.
job being in Springfield, okay? None of them are hurting. And if they were, maybe they should, you know, it's just like a family here in our area that has someone that gets laid off. I mean, what's the difference?
Right.
Maybe it's a good thing for these guys to experience this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just silly.
They're gonna eventually. They're either gonna override the veto or Pat Quinn is going to relent. Okay, mm-hmm. They're gonna get paid in full.
Right.
You know, if they are our own personal or finances are so mismanaged that they can't skip a month's pay. I think I'm a little more worried for us.
Oh, I've been a little more worried for decades, but it's baffling to me. So what's up with Mr. Frank, sir? Is he calling in today, or what's our prognosis on that?
I did have a confirmation earlier today, and I did send his staff a message before he went on air.
All right.
So just because he's a minute late.
I'm just checking because it would be the Rupert, it's the perfect time.
It would be perfect. He'd be the perfect person because he's a Democrat.
Yes.
He's kind of a what they call a populist Democrat. Mm-hmm. He's very critical of taxes. He's very critical of some issues that we talked about here, the Metro scandal. We're obviously critical of Pat Quinn, so he's critical of those, and he would be the perfect person to comment on that.
Well, speak of the devil, Representative Franks, because he must have heard me, just called in. Representative, are you there?
My ears were burning. Thank
you. Well, your timing is perfect. Thank you so much for calling in. And, what would you like us to call you? Representative Jack or anything but late for dinner?
Jack is fine.
Jack, Jeff Ward here, of course.
Yeah.
In all my 8 years of column writing, I mean, when I told our listeners that there was no way that any Springfield legislators would sue our governor to get their pay, I would have given you 100-1 odds on that. What are your thoughts on the fact that Senate President John Cullerton and Darth Madigan are actually suing the governor to get their pay reinstated?
I think it's embarrassing. I think the optics are terrible. I understand why they did it, but I wouldn't have. The governor, I think, has been disingenuous in this whole thing. Here's a guy who gives up his pay voluntarily, which I'm not even sure you can, because I had a friend of mine who was chairman of an agency, and he tried to give back his salary, and we had to pass a law for him to allow him to do that. That's how
that does happen. Yes.
Yeah. So it does, not very often, but it's difficult. But I think the governor should have given the rank and file legislators the ability to do that instead of have vetoed it, because the reason is, and forget this issue, that's not what I'm talking about, but any future governor now would have the precedent, if the General Assembly didn't do what he or she wanted them to do, to take away their pay. And you just fill in the blank, it could be anything. You know, let's say a governor wants to increase tax rates or do a progressive tax or whatever it might be, take away the ability for conceal and carry, or if he wants to double property taxes. And that's why we've always had a co-equal branch of government. Mm-hmm. So I think what the governor did here was a very dangerous precedent. I understand how populist it is, but I think he should have handled it much differently. I agree with him that we shouldn't get paid. I just don't like the way he did it.
No, and you're right. If he had done it, made it a voluntary thing, the people that did not choose to do so would have looked rather poor by comparison. But right. In defense of Governor Quinn, and I can't believe I'm actually saying those words,
Jack. Say that again real slow.
In defense of Governor Quinn, he's not aiming, at least ostensibly, he's not aiming for a specific outcome. He's saying, I don't care what you do, you need to fix this, and if you don't, you're not doing your job.
Well, you ought to look in the mirror. Here's a guy for 3 years who said that he was put on God's green earth to fix our pension system. In that entire time, he's never given us a plan. He's never told us what he would actually agree to. He's never told us what he would veto. The only thing he's given us, and I got to give him credit for this, is Squeezy the Python.
You know, Jack, this is Alan Skillicorn, by the way, and yeah. We have a pretty sophisticated fan base. We've already talked about, you know, now that we're past the end of the fiscal year, whatever they pass out of this, the committee, it doesn't matter because it's not going to go into place for another year. So if Pat Quinn was so serious about this, if he's been on God's green earth to push for this pension issue, why wasn't he talking about it May 31st?
He should have been talking about it the whole time. I got up on the House floor at the end of January, and I asked the governor to call a special session and say the only thing we're going to deal with is the pension issue. All other issues will be put aside until we fix this issue. No one will be able to bring a bill to the floor. We're not going to vote on anything else. We're going to be in perpetual special session until we solve this issue. And my suggestion was to do what's known as a committee of the whole, and have mm-hmm. all the legislators meet on the floor of the House of Representatives, bring all the stakeholders in. And I also called the governor and said, listen, why don't you bring in some retired Supreme Court judges and some retired appellate judges so we can determine what would be deemed constitutional. Let's bring in the actuaries. Let's have a real discussion. But instead, he just, you know, throws bombs, sits in his ivory tower, and complains.
He's not a leader. He never has been. I mean,
no.
The fact that he managed to get elected baffles me to this day.
Absolutely. Yeah, well,
I agree, and I mean, I don't think he is not a CEO of the fifth largest state in the nation. I mean, I don't think any company would hire him even for middle management.
No, and it's not, we can't run government like a business because they're, you know, but that doesn't mean I think Barack Obama has a similar problem. If you're going to be governor, if you're going to be president, you've got to be able to schmooze. You know, you've got to be able to bring people together. You've got to be able to get them to see your point. You know, it's not an easy gig, but if you're going to take it, you got to do it.
No, he's not. I agree with you. He's not a leader whatsoever, and I understand why he did this, but it really was more for his benefit than the citizens of the state of Illinois. He was doing it only for political points, much like his predecessor, his mentor, Rod Blagojevich. He learned a lot from Rod.
And that's a scary statement if there ever was one.
And before we move on to some questions we have about Metro, Jack, how did you vote on SB1?
I voted yes.
Okay.
And I also co-sponsored Cullerton's bill. I want to pass something, and I want to get something done. I know it's not a popular vote for a lot of folks, but I think we needed to do something. And I can't believe that the governor was allowing the 90% of more than 90% of the General Assembly to sit on the sideline. I don't agree with this conference committee. I don't think that the four leaders who couldn't come to an agreement should be able to have put 10 people on there as their proxy to not come to an agreement.
Yeah. That
you know, that's interesting. Knowing who's on the conference committee, there's only a couple of people on there that are kind of mopes.
Yeah.
I think the rest of them probably can come to something, but I think it's more of a problem between Madigan and Cullerton. And wouldn't you agree that, I mean, this whole thing, this current situation where we have Madigan rewriting SB1 and Madigan rewriting Cullerton's other bill, I mean, don't you think it's a power struggle between the two of them?
I think they have a real disagreement on policy issues. I certainly agree with you. But that's where a strong leader could have sat down with them
right.
and said, okay,
absolutely.
Guys, let's get together. We're going to take parts of each, and nobody's going to get 100%. So instead of getting the savings we would have got from SB1, we're going to get 80%. You know, we're going to do it this way, guys. And I think a strong leader would have gotten that done in a day.
Do you think it has something to do with that Speaker Madigan is just inherently more powerful position than, you know, than the current governor, even though he's been in politics a long time. He just doesn't pull the strings.
The governor doesn't. The governor doesn't know how to manage. He's never passed a bill. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I think, and this is what happens at times when you get folks who have been reformers or dissidents. It's sad. When they get into power, they're so used to being the one throwing the bombs, they can't adjust to it.
Right.
You know, and so I always get nervous when some of those folks win because it doesn't always pan out the way it should be, and they become what they loathe.
So, well, and the problem I find with Pat Quinn as well is if you disagree with him on a policy issue, he takes it personally.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. It's hard to have a frank discussion with the person because he doesn't invite it.
And if you,
he wants yes people around him.
You can't go into politics without a thick skin.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, most politicians inherently have thin skin.
I know. So. It's astounding. But Jack, thank you for your thoughts on that. We're going to move on to another subject near and dear to my soul because as a columnist, you know, it's funny. You're the one that sponsored the – well, as a columnist, I covered the Metro Board extensively. Now, all of a sudden, the Tribune is decided it's important enough to do so.
Right.
And my theory was that nobody on any board, including the Kane County Board, my neck of the woods, deserves a pension and benefits – for serving us, you know, for 12 meetings a year, essentially.
Right.
And you sponsored the legislation and Pat Quinn signed it. I have thrown my hat into the ring to serve on the Metro Board. Let's go for full disclosure here. But what, you know, I mean, this more, we need a strong public transportation system. What are your thoughts on what this board is going to have to do going forward?
Well, it's a train wreck. Pun intended.
Okay.
I've been trying for years to pass that bill that the governor finally signed. It's really hard because what you have is a patronage system in government by crony that is just so well entrenched, and these folks are protected by their strong political patronage folks. So it's not designed to work, first of all. It's designed to be fiefdoms where these people can put their friends and their cronies.
Mm-hmm.
No intelligent person would ever have designed our transit system like what we have in Northern Illinois. We have four competing agencies giving separate messages with different lobbyists to both state and federal funders without any unified voice. We don't even have a fare card that you can use across the four of them. It's embarrassing to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's no thought of any end user and what's best for the taxpayer. It's all about protecting their own turf. If it was me and I were governor, I'd blow it all up. I'd fire every one of those board members from each of those agencies, and I'd put in emergency managers. Then what I would do is then reform the boards to have one board so we can be unified, and maybe we even have them elected. I'm not sure about that. I want to get some more feedback. But I just think we need to have direct accountability because right now these guys get placed on there, and you can't get them out no matter what they do. And there is absolutely no oversight. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But Jack, sadly, you know, we had Jack Schaefer on the show a couple of weeks ago, another Metro Board member. Sadly, you know, Mike McCoy here from Kane County. Actually, Jack absolved him. He was a good guy. It is sad that he did resign. I think he did have the best
interest. But the DuPage rep resigned too.
DuPage rep just resigned.
Yeah. It's falling apart as we sit here.
And I called heavily. I mean, you know. Some of those columns got 200 responses I was in like 22 patches at the time, you know, for them to blow up the Metro Board when Phil Pagano got away with
them.
And they did, but the sad thing
is... No, they didn't.
A lot of those folks were forced to resign.
A few of them. Still the majority of them were still there. The same people who were asleep at the wheel when Pagano looted them blind are the same group that hired Alex Clifford... And many of the same ones who fired Alex Clifford.
Yeah. And by the way, although like the broken clock that's right twice a day, I think Alex Clifford was a reasonable hire.
He might have been. He might have been.
But he wasn't in control. I mean, the people that put those people on the board were basically doing their bidding.
Well, wait a second. Let's go back. The reason they hired this guy is because he was cheap. They didn't want to go to the East Coast where the people had actually run railroads. Mm-hmm. Instead, they went to the West Coast. Remember, Alex Clifford didn't have any railroad experience.
He was frank about that.
But they didn't save us any money. We were paying him $250,000 a year plus. Then what they did is they hired a consultant and paid the consultant $350,000 a year to actually run the railroad.
Well,
is that a mess you really want to get into, Jeff?
Yeah, well, you know what? There's a sense of putting your money where your mouth is. I've written about all these issues, Jack. I know they are heavy on consultants. I used to joke about, you know, like the consultants to do the spin on the whole Pagano thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, the guy jumped in front of one of his own trains. I mean, so yeah, I mean, you know, I was a watchdog for 8 years, and if I don't get it, I'll sit home, run, drink scotch, and play my online baseball game. If I get it, I'll be the watchdog. You know, I think it will be interesting if I got it. But my thought is at this point, and especially with what you're saying, Jack, is it's more important to get a board member on there that's going to look out for Northeastern Illinois taxpayers than it is to get somebody who, you know,
is beholden to various interests.
Yeah.
You know, so, Jack, we're about to wrap up here. But you're one of the few Democrats I know in this area, and you're a Democrat from McHenry County. Do you have ambitions to go statewide?
And I thought about it this time, but with the Attorney General deciding to stay put, that certainly limited the options. And I'm happy with the fact that the Democrats have a choice now in the primary, and I think Bill Daley would be head and shoulders above Mr. Quinn.
So
you're on the record of supporting Bill Daley over Pat Quinn?
Oh, absolutely.
Daley's going to end all the suspense. It's going to be Daley versus Rutherford, and I think Dan might pull it out.
Well, I'm not sure if there's not a third person who comes in, you know, for the Democrats.
Scott Lee Cohen.
Oh, well, I'm voting.
You can only hope.
Anybody that hangs up with a hooker that he doesn't realize he doesn't realize she's a hooker is okay in my book.
Alrighty. Well, thank you very much, Representative Jack Franks from McHenry.
Thanks so
Where
much,
can people
guys.
Find you quickly, Jack, before we go to break?
Jack@jackfranks.org.
Okay.
You can email me there or call me at my Woodstock office at 815-334-0063.
Thank you so much for joining us,
and
Jack.
We're about to go to break. This is Alan Skillicorn. That's Jeff Ward. This is WRMN on AM 1410. So last night I didn't sleep. So I got my laptop going. And fortunately, when you're sitting in bed, it gets hot, doesn't have a good airflow. You know, even though it was a cool night, it's still uncomfortable.
Well, I got the solution for you. I invented a product called the Lapinator. And you can go to www.lapinator.com. It is a laptop.
You might have to spell that.
Lapinator. I found out in French it means rabbit killer, but, you know, so much for brand name testing.
Yeah, you're not going to be very popular in France.
No, not in France. But basically what the Lapinator is, Ellen, it's a portable insulated laptop desk that not only keeps 95% of laptop heat off your lap, so I don't have to get the fire extinguisher out every time you use your laptop, but it keeps your laptop 11 degrees cooler with no moving parts. So, hey.
That's great. And heat does damage electronics.
We sell all our products through Amazon, so, you know, you can get shipping free. Go to www.lapinator.com. www.lapinator.com.
Hi, this is Alan Skillicorn. Here's a reminder that Odyssey Forge offers creative, custom, and unique internet solutions. Looking for more security or two-factor verification? Odyssey Forge has a solution for you. Do you want a custom WordPress site? Odyssey Forge can customize the popular platform. What about secure e-commerce? Odyssey Forge will develop an attractive site easy to use for you and your customers. Check out www.odysseyforge.com or see my Odyssey Forge-powered site, alanskillicorn.com.
Yes, I am hoping that our producer, Dave, will come sail away with me. But
it would be a fabulous day to be on a boat in Lake Michigan.
Wouldn't it, though?
It's not too hot. It's sunny. It's perfect, though.
It is phenomenal running weather. I ran 10 miles this Saturday, Sunday. 6 miles Saturday, 10 miles Sunday.
Oh, okay.
It was a great, and by the way, I ran into county board member John Hoscheit running, and he's a decent runner.
Oh.
If you didn't know that about John.
But well, the Forest Preserve, you know, keeps you healthy.
Yeah.
And, well, where can people find you when they look you up, Jeff?
The I'm still not posting quite as much these days, but www.thefirstward.net.
And people can find me at www.alanskillicorn.com or my Twitter, at Alan right. Skillicorn, and it's been quite active lately. A lot of good, meaty, juicy posts, obviously the newspaper is reading because that's where they found that story about me, yep. and talking about our village hall and how much it costs. So
interesting. But speaking of running.
Yeah, speaking of running.
Don't we have somebody on that's about to come on that's hosting a 5K, I believe?
Yeah, I want to introduce to our listeners Kirsten, who's behind the Red Run, and something that even though Jeff and me can disagree on many subjects, we're mm-hmm. probably pretty safe that we're both against human trafficking.
Yeah. Yes, so, I would have to come down on your side.
So, Kirsten, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you tell me, tell us, our listeners, all you know, a whole bunch of them, people listening on the internet, people listening to the podcast, they can download after the show and on the air. That's making
it's
nervous.
It's nice how you work that in, Alan.
But can you tell us a little bit about the event you're doing and then the reason why?
Sure. The event is called the Red Run. It's a 5K run and walk, and our mission is to raise awareness and resources to fight child sex trafficking.
And
the reason why, yes.
And Kirsten, sorry to interrupt you, but that's pretty big right
Actually,
now.
I think it's Kirsten.
Is that correct? Kirsten, sorry.
Yeah.
It's pretty big right now because the feds just busted how many, they're now like up to 350 people for, child sex trafficking here in this country.
Yeah, there was just this weekend, the undercover operation was like 150 pimps and equal amount of victims that mm-hmm. were rescued. So it's pretty awesome. It's just a drop in the bucket, but it's a start.
Yeah. So your run, when is it, where is it, and how can people sign up for it?
The run is next Saturday, August 10th, in Algonquin at Presidential Park, and you can sign up at theredrun.org.
That's great. And what kind of help do you guys actually provide in fighting human trafficking?
Well, we donate money to three organizations. One is international work, is Love 146. Which is actually where the whole history of the red dress was inspired by, little girls being sold in red dresses in Southeast Asia. And then we also donate to two local organizations right here in Illinois, in Chicago, which is the Dreamcatcher Foundation, which is a survivor-led and run organization, and they do outreach on the streets and find these girls and help them. And then Anne's House, which is a Salvation Army house where the girls can then go once they've been in a word rescued.
That's great. And people can make donations through the website, the redrun.org, and they're yep. deductible, right? This is a charity, correct?
We're a 501c3 foundation, and so everything's tax deductible.
That's good. And it's good that you talk about both foreign and domestic. I don't know if everyone out there knows that this isn't just a problem outside the United States. This is going on in the United States. But then also overseas, primarily it's American and European tourists, I guess, that are the Johns that are using these young girls, and it's a very sad thing, and I think that more people should be aware of it.
I agree. I think most people are somewhat aware of the international aspect. It's kind of easier to think it's happening over there,
but I'm
shocked at how many people still are not. I'm believing that it's happening right here. I mean, in your own backyard, literally.
Well, obviously, you've got two organizations here in Illinois, in Chicagoland, that are dealing with victims. So it is right underneath our noses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Well, that's great.
I personally volunteer with these girls, so I get to see the effect from the other end. So it's mm-hmm. pretty exciting.
Well, then, let's encourage all our listeners, Ellen, to get out. That is this upcoming Saturday, correct, Kirsten?
Next, the 10th.
Oh, the 10th.
Next Saturday.
Next Saturday, August 10th, 5K, Algonquin.
Yep, or make a donation. And it's a good cause, and it's something that people need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
People should be letting their friends know. They should put it on social media.
Right.
Put it on your Facebook page. Put it on your Twitter page.
Sounds good.
Put it out there and just get educated. At the end of the day, if you can just learn to look at things through a new lens, that will make a difference right there.
Those are wise words.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you so much for joining us, Kirsten.
Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you.
And thanks, again, Jack. Where can people reach you and reach you?
You can go to theredrun.org.
Great.
Sounds
and
good.
That was Kirsten Guerri. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
I might have to show up for that. I haven't done a 5K in a while. I got to get off my butt and do one. But no, I think that is a worthwhile cause, and I hope our listeners do their best to.
If they don't run, just, you know, they can make a donation, and it's no amount is too small or too trivial. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, another thing, since we're Dave is playing. I was trying to get there, but Dave is playing one of my favorite songs, which is by Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, called "Cover of the Rolling Stone." And the thing I love about this song is this rock band makes hellacious fun of themselves. And back in 1972, I believe, when the song came out, that was somewhat unusual. They took themselves a bit more seriously. But thank you, Dave, for that wonderful segue. But as most of our listeners probably already know, there's been a big furor about the surviving Boston bomber. I have real trouble with his name.
Yeah. We can call him the rock star now, yeah. The rock star terrorist.
Yeah, appearing on the cover of the Rolling Stone. And I have to say, as a journalist, I totally disagree with the uproar, because I think in no way were they glorifying this guy. Simply putting someone's face on the cover, you know, Time years ago called Ayatollah Khomeini Man of the Year. But clearly Man of the Year for them was a person that had affected the world the most, for better or for worse.
Yeah, but Ayatollah's mom did have that framed on her wall.
You know, I believe Hitler also received the same honor before, well, not honor, the same treatment. And what the Rolling Stone has done, I'm somewhat through the article, is they have attempted to define what created this kid who then turned around and set out to maim and injure people. You know, what bugs me the most about this is this culture simply likes to dismiss people as evil. You know, not mentally ill, that's not the case here, like in the case of the
kid in Connecticut.
Yeah. You know, they just dismiss it as evil. It's almost as, you know, it and by doing that, here I go stuttering again because I'm trying to say too much at the same time. And by doing that, what conservative religious people like to do, and it's not only them, what they're doing is abrogating any responsibility to, as the Bible says, be your brother's keeper. And, you know, the Boston bomber wasn't always this kid. As the Rolling Stone pointed out, he had promise. And because his parents failed him and other situations failed him, you know, he went in this direction. You know, these people aren't created in a vacuum.
And are you apologizing for him?
No, not at all. Not at all. But what I'm saying is, in my world, rather than being in some sort of Calvinistic predetermined, and you know, the Calvinists who, to a large degree, founded this country, said, you know what, we're all predetermined. There's no point in fighting back against anything. And I'm trying to fight against
that. Well, I have a feeling that was more about if you're saved or not, not if you have free will or not.
But no, Calvinists believed there was no free will.
Well, free will and if you were saved.
Yes, but
not your actions, you know, your non-heavenly actions.
But you know, dismissing somebody as simply evil gives you no power to maybe affect the next kid that's headed in this direction. It gives you no power to truly change things. All you get to do is sit back and go, God, we are beset by evil. There's nothing we can do. God, deliver us.
Well,
and
see,
that's not good enough
for
me.
And I think that, you know, you're partially right about that evil comment. Mm. I think a week ago you mentioned that this didn't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
And you're partially right on that too. But in the bigger context of this, what he did was evil.
Yes, the act was evil. Yes, absolutely.
And there, you know, we have to own our own actions.
Correct.
So, you know, this young man has to own his actions. No matter, I mean, he may feel that it's completely justified, but we cannot, you know, that's not acceptable behavior. You know, I mean, there's plenty of things that are not unacceptable.
And this is not excusing it. I mean, this kid's going to probably spend the rest of his life in jail, and I don't have a problem with that.
Sure. And here's the thing: if this guy was out on the loose, he'd probably do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the situation. At least, okay, I'm sorry, I'm assuming that, but that's what I feel, is that he'd probably do something like this again.
I hate to toss off someone this young completely, you know, that maybe he can't be rehabilitated at some point. And that is supposed to be.
But we can't forget about the three people that die. We can't think about the hundreds of people that are injured. You know, we have people that, you know, lost limbs because of this.
Oh,
we have families that aren't going to see their children again.
Now, there's some, you know, there's some mistakes you don't come back from.
Wasn't one of the victims a 9-year-old?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, my theory is, you know, and you and I agree on the mentally ill aspect, that we do not treat our mentally ill citizens with the respect and care they deserve and need. And that leads to some of these issues. But separately, what I believe the Rolling Stone was attempting to do was say, you know what, look, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. People don't come out of the womb, you know, set to do evil acts.
Just to let you know, everyone, by the way, it also, Rolling Stone just reported, just doubled its sales from that magazine itself. So
were they out for the money?
Commercial appeal.
Yeah, I don't know. They're out for the money. They're a huge hit for it. I mean,
well, you know, here's the thing, though. Writing an article about, okay, the kid had promise, and this and this and this happened to him, and we think this is why this happened to him. You know, like, let's say a psychologist say that. That's fine. I actually do think the cover did glamorize it to some degree. And it's not unlike when some kid shoots up a school and then the media covers that and covers that and covers that. All of a sudden, if you are, you know, socially unacceptable, you know, if you're mad at society, if you're an outcast and you think, well, I want to be famous. I want to go in a blaze of glory. Well, unfortunately, the media, you know, Rolling Stone, the TVs, all these people have basically, you know, promoted this. And, like, you know what? You will go out in a blaze of glory, and we're going to sell commercials over it.
Right, but and I don't think that was the Rolling Stones' intent.
But even if it wasn't their intent, that's the consequence. Right. We're going to have kids that are I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory. I'm going to have that cool rock star image on Rolling Stone because I'm going
to
kill people.
See, I think it's embarrassing to the family.
But there's a responsibility that the media is very powerful, okay? Basically, we have a lot of people. A lot of people can think for themselves.
Right.
But there's people that just do what they're told, and they're just a mindful of mush, okay? And they're going to see this, and they may react stupidly.
But to what point, you know, two things. To what point do we continually react in this culture to the least common denominator, which we are in the process of doing? And you know what bugs me in that regard, Alan, is shows like, I will not watch shows like The Sopranos. I will not watch The Godfather movies, because I think it glamorizes cold-blooded killers.
I love your least common denominator factor. And my thought to this is, it's not like that the government comes down and Rolling Stone says you can't do it. Because obviously the First Amendment says you can do what they want. I just think there's a higher calling and responsibility that when you have a nationally published magazine, to be a little smart. You could have that image with like murderer across it or like crossed out. And
Say the bomber, though.
Yeah.
And he does say the bomber on the cover.
Right.
So, I mean,
and not only
of course,
that,
he also says
think,
Willie Nelson and Jay-Z and stuff,
you know,
like that.
And Rolling Stone tackles some tough subjects that many of which you agree with, the corruption in Washington, D.C. and how these things work. I think that would have fed into he's evil. And I think what Rolling Stone did and said, you know what, this is a regular kid who went horribly wrong. And I think this culture, you know, good Christians should embrace it. What does, you know, the Bible says he should be forgiven.
I don't think that cover is any different than the, 12-year-old picture of Trayvon Martin. It was an intentional deception.
No, I disagree. We're going to have to disagree on this
can
one.
Do you believe, either one of you, that there could be a copycat version of this? Being somebody says, oh, look, I could take a picture. I guess he was taking this picture from his own iPhone, I guess. So if somebody does create, you know, mayhem, becomes a murderer, bomber, like the guy in the cover of Rolling Stone, do you think this is going to have other younger people doing the same thing, going, hey, I've got big things waiting for me.
I think the media coverage of school shootings has far more to do with, I mean, the general media coverage, I don't think the Rolling Stone would be enough. I think the general media coverage, I wish they would not announce the names of these school shooters and delve, you know,
at least something, you know, instead of going covering everything, they just take, you know, they just do everything and go as far as they can because they're like, they want to get the scoop. They want to have the best story. They want to have the best advertised rating. And the answer to Dave's question is, I don't know if that's the case. I mean, we're just regular guys. We can't, you know, we can't say for sure what's happening, but you know, kids are impressionable, especially kids that have problems.
Right.
And don't relate to society very well. They are impressionable.
My favorite column retort to the kids are impressionable thing was, you know, because especially, you know, we've had all sorts of lawsuits over rock music and rock music drives people to do satanic things. But my favorite argument, Alan, was, man, if rock music can do that, what about all the love songs? I mean, still 90%
of babies are still being born, Jeff.
Yeah, but we're still getting divorced at a rate higher than 50%.
But think about the rock songs. Is there, are there rock songs out there, you know, glorifying this kind of violence? You know, other than, you know, during the 80s, there was a really small, like, neo-Nazi thing. I mean, everything was probably more blown up. But I really don't hear mainstream. Unfortunately, I hear rap music talking about, you know, killing and things like that, which they should be more responsible too. Absolutely. I mean, they have freedom to say that, whatever they want.
They have monetized the dysfunction of the inner
city. And you know what? Shame on the record producers that take advantage of it.
Shame on the white kids that buy it. But again, my main point, I'm going to try to stop the stuttering. My main point is, as a culture, who do we want to be? The people that just discards these folks, tosses them out, they're evil, there's nothing we can do, or the ones that say, you know what? They have to pay for their actions. Absolutely, they have to pay the price. But we need to go beyond the easy platitudes, dig into what created them, and perhaps learn from it.
Well, Jeff, I'm glad that you have a positive point from the obvious attempt to sensationalize this from Rolling Stone. At least you're taking a positive point and saying that this is something society should discuss, and that is true.
And, we agreed on two things today.
I wouldn't say that's agreement.
lastly, Alan, you know, in addition, as we're getting towards the I tell you, this is the fastest hour in my life when we do this show. It just flies by.
Well, it goes for me. It's faster than running.
Yeah. But, quite frequently, in my columns, I took religious folk to task because being a Christian is a high standard. It really, really is. And as you know, I ran for Pope. I even have the red shoes. I have them on today. They did not consider me. You don't have to be a cardinal to be a Pope, you realize. But I got to tell you, as an ex-Catholic, and I know that you're not of that ilk, what the Pope said this week on his flight back from his visit to South America to the press about gays has me hopeful for the people that are still Catholics. And basically what he said was, you know what, if you're gay and you follow, you know, you have good intentions and you follow the doctrine. I forget exactly.
I know you're paraphrasing.
Yeah, paraphrasing.
I was wondering if you had a quote.
Who am I to judge you? That's the quote. That's the part right there. You know, who am I to judge you? And I got to tell you, Pope Frank is really starting to grow on me. I mean, the Catholic Church, as long as you're okay with a two steps forward, one step back. I mean, let's face it.
Sure.
The Catholic Church, he still doesn't want women to be ordained.
You know, let's go into what he said. Now, what he said that was right, who am I to judge? Well, ultimately, you know, it's God, our maker, and standing before Jesus and having an account for
or
our
sins. Or whichever deity you believe in.
Well, you know, I would hope that he would agree with that God and Jesus.
But. Well, but I'm just for our listeners' sake. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where he's correct. And he didn't mention the acts. I mean, if you're, you know, you've got, same-sex urges, I don't think the Bible says anything about that.
It doesn't.
It's the action which they calls out, okay?
And not even that the Bible, in the New Testament, not at all. Jesus never spoke about homosexuality. And he did hang out with 12 guys.
I'm just shaking my head.
Yeah.
But then the part that and I'm not a theologian, and I'm not going to tell the Catholic Church how to do anything. It's their deal. You know, who am I to tell them how to do their deal is? Now, there's things that I might disagree with because of my own study. But again, I'm not a theologian. So, but what I see is that when he said, if your good intentions, your heart, well, that's not how you get to heaven. And any Catholic knows this too. It's Jesus. It's, you know, Jesus is the sacrificial lamb for our sin. And I wish he would have just said that, because it what he said, I'm almost thinking like, well, good works?
But that's not the case.
But
I don't think he was addressing that.
He may not have, but it did sound that way.
He has been notorious. You know, one of the biggest, knocks against him when he came into office was he's demonstrably anti-woman and demonstrably anti-gay. And, just like, Sir Thomas More, when he came in to to England, I think...
I think those statements are just over the top. I just can't see tenets of the Church of Christ, either the Catholic Church or the Evangelical Church. I mean, Christ was empowering women. I mean, at the time, women were spoken down to. They weren't part of the...
But he allowed them
to have salvation.
Yeah, but Pope Francis has been... I mean, this is certainly... The least you can say about this, Alan, is this is a softening of his stance.
Well, did his stance change? That's the other question. Did his stance change?
Not really. No, I will give you that.
He gave it to me.
However, it's a different... You know, sometimes, change creep. One of my favorite programs ever was The Day the Universe Changed. I don't know if you remember that in your youth. I wasn't quite that young. And it talked about the subtle statements, the subtle things that change this mm-hmm. world. And with the Pope making that statement, there, make no mistake, there was a shift. I got to tell you, I got to give him a lot of credit. I really do. So,
well, you know, we could get into a whole, you know, canonized scripture says one right. thing. And, you know, also in Revelation, you know, Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, basically warned of people with different teachings. Mm-hmm. So you cannot change canonized scripture. If the Holy Spirit's telling you that, oh, this is okay, or disregard this part, well, that's not true, because the Holy Spirit can't disregard canonized scripture.
Yeah, but
so it's when you say, oh, things are going to change.
But it's like,
I don't know.
It's more subtle things. It's kind of like, you know, I had a long talk with Monsignors and the Rockford Diocese when, because the state of Illinois said, you know, you can't discriminate against same-sex couples for adoption, Catholics took their football and went home. You know what? I can see this.
They didn't get the funding for it either.
Right. I can see the Pope's statement maybe causing an eventual reevaluation of that kind of thing. If their intentions are good, and they're truly care about the raising this foster child, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing. So that's where I see the
or
the
it's okay to refer those people to someone else.
You know, but we're not going to agree. But that's what I think. I think it's kind of cool.
And you know what? I shouldn't say. You know what? I apologize for saying those people.
Yeah.
That I shouldn't have said that, because, you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with what they say. And there's, you know what? If people are not going to be believers, mm-hmm. they have that freedom not to
right.
be believers.
Right.
And they can do what they want. And I'm not going to get in the way of that.
But you got to remember, I'm a guy that's held, you know, that's taken a boatload of. I mean, people were threatening to boycott Patch for a column I wrote on Wheaton University, and I supported Wheaton University, for God's sakes.
What is your opinion, speaking of Pat Robertson? I don't know if you were going to bring this up or not, about transgender. Said he thought that was okay. He goes, I don't think there's any sin associated with transsexual.
Pat, you know what?
Pat, I think we're speechless.
I know.
Pat has made so many bizarre statements, not the least of which was,
you know, it's something that before I answer, I have to think about it. But you know what? I don't want to think about
yeah,
it.
Pat yeah. Robertson is a lunatic. I hate to say it. But my point here, Alan, is I have held religious folks' feet to the fire, and I think it is just as important to then when a religious folk responds to those flames. I'm not saying he responded to me in a positive manner, to kind of say, you know what? He did all right. It's not perfect, but in this two steps forward, one step back world, I got to give him some credit for it.
But, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to criticize him or compliment him. Mm. I mean, if we're going to be open-minded and have these discussions, that's fine. We can have these discussions. But you know what? Tolerances go both ways. You can't expect the church to be tolerant of something, and if you're not going to be tolerant of the church to begin with.
But,
and that's what having true discourse. I mean, there's things we disagree about, but you know, you don't go, wow, I'm not going to talk to you about that.
But you got to be careful, because the church has condoned bigotry in the past.
And you know what?
Scripture as a method.
And it was wrong.
Right.
Okay.
So we got to be careful.
And it was wrong. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with, you know, calling them out when they're wrong. And, you know, there's things that I disagree about.
But I want to call them out when they're right. And in this case, Pope Frank he's growing on me. I got to tell you. He is growing.
You know, I did. So in researching the show, just a couple weeks ago, you know, Pope Francis said marriage should be a stable union between a man and a woman.
Well, again,
and he went on and on.
Right. I agree. I you know, we're not there yet.
And you know what? But yesterday, Cardinal George here in Illinois, you know, when it comes to marriage and family life, men and women are not interchangeable. And and there was other stuff in there that was pretty.
Two steps forward, Alan. One step back. Two steps forward. One step back. But we're to the time in the show, that time where we now calm down, take a deep breath, get in our Zen meditation position, and tell the people where they can find us and thank them for listening.
You first.
Okay, me first. You can find me, you know, of course, www.thefirstword.net. You can find us, and Alan and I love to argue. The best place really to find us is the Facebook fan page, I think, because we get into discussions. We love to disagree. I call you misguided and delusional. You call me what? I forget what you did last week.
Collect.
Yeah. You call me anything but late for dinner. So the Facebook fan page, come on, please join us, folks.
Yes.
We love the discussion.
Facebook.com/group/left, right, and you.
Or just type left, right, and you. in the search. So where can they find you, Alan?
Well, I have a website, www.alanskillicorn.com, mm-hmm. Which, just like yourfirstword.net, is going to have the podcast on it.
Right.
I also have an archive of all the podcasts. So if you want to see, we talked about Metro, Jack Schaefer. If you want to go back 2 weeks and listen to that show, boom, it's right there. It's really easy to find. Also, Twitter at Alan Skillicorn.
Excellent. And since we have about a minute and a half left, I do want to point out that though I was wrong when I said nobody would have the cojones to sue Pat Quinn, Governor Quinn, over withholding legislator pay, and then they did. I was right that Anthony Weiner, who we briefly talked about last week, stick a fork in him, he's done. Since his
he still thinks the tide's still rising.
That's not the only thing he thinks that's rising.
And yet, the more he's in the news, is whether it's bad
he
publicity
has
or not,
it's last place in the Democratic
is last place.
Primary.
You know, I was thinking about playing his ad. It was basically like, New Yorkers are tough, and we can handle this, and you know, the guy is so full of himself.
It is baffling.
And I don't get the woman. Huma, what are you thinking?
You know what the lady...
You're like a modern-day Hillary Clinton.
She's blaming herself for not sticking with counseling when they had their kid. She's saying she's partially to blame. She did go to the Hillary Clinton school of dealing with men. But anyway...
All right, see everyone next week. Yeah. We should have an action-packed show next Thursday.
Always.
And just, you can tell your friends. You can get
Bill
us online
Daly
or on
next
podcast.
Week.
Yeah, let's get them. All right, thank you for listening.
This is Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler, author of Why Men Fake It. Listen up to the best radio station in Chicago, WRMN 1410.
In Elgin.